Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Raindrops keep falling on my head. And just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head. They keep falling. So I just did me some talking to...
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Along with Lennon and McCartney, Gershwin and Porter, Burt Bacharach is considered among the 20th century's most prolific and successful songwriters. He's won 6 Grammys, 3 Oscars. He's collaborated on 48 top 10 hits, including classics like The Look of Love, What the World Needs Now, and this 1967 hit. He's also inspired the likes of Elvis Costello and even John Zorn. After 6 decades in the business, Burt Bacharach continues to tour and record. His latest album is live at the Sydney Opera House, and I'm pleased to welcome him to Soundcheck. Burt, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Burt, many decades of big, popular song hits, and here you are at age 79 with a full symphony orchestra. Why?
In this particular setting, my God, it's beautiful, and that opera house, and acoustically, and the connection that you have with the audience, and a wonderful symphony orchestra. And it's a departure for me. It, you know, I cross over into something maybe connecting me to my classical training and classical background. And
so, I mean, it's not generally known. You studied with Darius Milhaud, the French composer. But, you know,
I studied with him. Yeah, I studied with Darius Milhaud, and I studied with Henry Cowell in New York City.
And, really?
And Bohuslav Martineau. So, you know, there was a lot of, you know, serious contemporary music that I was hearing and exposed to when I was living in New York and kind of just seeing where the drift would take me, you know? I mean, like, I wasn't sure what I was going to do with my life, but I do know that I wasn't really supposed to be a serious classical contemporary composer who would write something that would occasionally be performed by the Oklahoma City Symphony or something like that. You know, it's a tough road, you know, and I like the better life, the good life, you know, and I think to be a starving composer, I didn't want it enough, or it wasn't meant to be. I think I was meant to be what I've turned out to be.
Well, Burt, there are plenty of starving songwriters as well. I mean, you know, I guess whichever way you chose to go, talent will out. Was there like a moment when you realized, no, that classical route's not for me? I want to work shorter forms. I want, you know, singers to sing my songs and people to listen to them on the radio, that sort of thing.
I think what occurred to me was, you know, I needed to make a living at the time, and so there were a variety of people that I would conduct and play the piano for. The first was Vic Damone.
Marlene Dietrich.
As the music director. Marlene Dietrich was the last. And there were the Ames Brothers and Polly Bergen and Imogene Coca. I mean, just even conducted for Steve Lawrence on a weekend in Union City, New Jersey, you know. So it was a good way to learn how to try to conduct an orchestra on the road and be accepted. I was pretty young doing this and looked young, and you hit Vegas and you hit an orchestra that's got a bit of an attitude, and it could be like, what is this young guy telling us to do, you know? But by being exposed to, like, say, with the Ames Brothers, I'd hear a lot of material that was submitted to the Ames Brothers. You know, they had that big hit, You, I'm in love with you, you. You know, and I'd hear that song, and I'd hear other songs that would come in when we were on the road, and I'd listen to them or play them on the piano or, as I say, listen to the demos. And they were beyond simple and beyond familiar. Like, where did I hear this song before and how many different forms and reincarnations? So that could be real easy for me. I could write 5 of these a day. So quit my job with the Ames Brothers and went to New York and started writing in the Brill Building. And it wasn't so easy. you were talking about starving songwriters and people that didn't make a living. And I think you just have to be lucky. I do believe if you have the talent, it will be recognized. Back then, maybe now it's a little tougher for good songs, you know, to get established. Well, the artists are different, you know. The very good singers, you know, Alicia Keys, they write their own material.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking for an outside song. It was a world at the time that we had many great voices out there that, and we still have those great voices, but they don't necessarily get played at radio. Radio is a nightmare when it comes to the sense of exposing new product. What you do here in NPR, you know, is a godsend, you know? I mean, you do play new music and you play new things, but top 40 radio as we knew. So, you know, the artists that you could count on to establish a song, like maybe in the urban market, a good song, like Aretha Franklin or Dionne Warwick or Patti LaBelle, Gladys Knight, you know, there's no given with them anymore. I mean, some of them don't even have a record deal. I think Aretha's got a label of her own, you know?
We're speaking with Burt Bacharach, joining us from the studios of KCRW in Santa Monica. I mentioned Dusty Springfield. She, of course, did the original version of The Look of Love, which is on this new live CD from the Sydney Opera House. Let's give people a chance to hear how this song sounds with the full symphonic treatment. This is Burt Bacharach with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra from his new recording, live at the Sydney Opera House.
In your eyes, a look that time can't disguise.
From the album Burt Bacharach, live at the Sydney Opera House, that is one of his many hits, The Look of Love. And actually, Burt, this new CD really does focus on a lot of the works from the 60s, the 70s, you know, when you and Hal David were fixtures on the pop charts. And this album is charting quite well. Your best chart ranking since 1971, according to Billboard magazine.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you think there's a kind of a new generation that's now sort of growing up and beginning to appreciate some of these older songs?
Yeah, you've got to say, who was the audience with all the Rod Stewart records, you know, that Clive made with him, of standards, you know, of the older songs?
Mm-hmm.
Or Barry Manilow doing the 70s decade or the 80s decade. So apparently there is an audience. I think it's a more mature record-buying public, I do believe, don't you? I mean, I think...
yeah, probably.
There are no record stores anymore. I mean, it's just, there are a few, and I'm very grateful that some of them have stayed in business. I know we have one or two out here in L.A.
And yet the digital world has made music much more accessible to people who might otherwise not have had access to it. And I don't mean, you know, that people didn't have music, but, I mean, there is something to be said
absolutely,
for having that
absolutely.
Kind of choice.
And there is another way, too, you know, I mean, like, of selling your records. And, you know, well, we've seen it with the Eagles going into Walmart, you know, and giving an exclusive. You bypass the record company or... And then you've got Radiohead, you know, basically saying, pay what you want to pay for this record.
It sounds like you're really keeping your finger on the pulse. I mean, it sounds like you're pretty aware of what's going on in the marketplace still.
I try to be. It is a business that is. The acts that used to record and could have hit records, I mean, they're not even going in the studio. I mean, they're just on the road. That's how... that's how you're making money now. Acts go on the road, whether it's Chicago, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Or Burt Bacharach.
Yeah, or, yeah, for me. I mean, there is something for me that is most enjoyable about being out there and being able to do my music, either self-contained or with a symphony orchestra. You know, the role of a composer is usually pretty anonymous. You stay in like a room and you write, and nobody knows what you look like, and you'll either have a success with what you're writing or you won't. But for me, you know, to be out there, the way things evolved, where I'm not a great singer, you know, I mean, all I've got going for me is my music and singers with me that can sing quite beautifully. And I think that I used to feel I'd get this kind of a pumped up thing. Like my wife Shane said, hey, you know, you come off the road and you walk down the streets of Santa Monica, where we were living, not far from where I am right now. And she said, well, nobody stands up. You don't get a standing ovation when you're back in Santa Monica. And I say, yeah, right. So there is something that's very kind of appealing about that.
My guest is Burt Bacharach, who clearly still likes to tour, but still frequents the recording studio. And in fact, Burt's collaboration with Elvis Costello couldn't have happened without a recording studio. Let's hear the results. A song called God Give Me Strength, Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello.
Now I have nothing, so God give me strength, 'cause I'm weak in a way. And if I'm strong, I might still break. And I don't have anything to share that I won't throw away into the air. That song is sung, this bell is rung. She was the light that I my last chance of happiness. So God give me strength. God give me strength. I can't hold on to.
The song is God Give Me Strength from Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. How did that collaboration work? Were you guys ever in the same place at the same time, or was it all done, you know, via emails or faxes and stuff?
Well, you're right on the emails. Well, there were new emails at the time. I think it was just faxes and answering machines. And on the first song, and that was God Give Me Strength. And by doing that one thing together, got it done rather rapidly, and then recorded it in New York, and it felt so great working together that we decided, let's go make a whole album.
The work with Elvis Costello is certainly one collaboration. Of course, Burt, people know you for the longstanding collaboration with the lyricist Hal David. How did you as a composer deal with text? Did you write the melodies before you had seen the text, or did the lyrics basically drive the rhythms of the song?
Good question. Did it both ways. Let's isolate a couple of songs. Alfie. All right, Alfie had to really reflect what lyrically Hal was trying to say about the movie and the character. You know, what's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? So that clearly was lyric first. Then set that to music. With Promises, Promises, another example that much of it really had to come song-wise right off the Neil Simon script, the Neil Simon dialogue, so it would kind of be seamless.
Promises, promises now. I don't know how I got the nerve to walk out.
And by the same token, I'd maybe have 8 bars of something musically and give it to Hal. And then it would piggyback, you know. He'd come up with something and I'd write 8 more bars. All different ways.
Hmm. The reason I ask is, you know, it has often struck me that if there's something particularly American about your music, it's the way it seems to reflect the patterns, the rhythms of American English. You know, I think of a song like Do You Know the Way to San Jose, where that melody, you know, that melody basically, it follows the rhythmic contour of an American walking up to another American on the street and saying, Do you know the way to San Jose?
Well, that's nice to hear. Yeah, never thought of it that way, but you're right. You know, I do like zeroing in on a lyric. But I know I've been writing some songs recently with Stephen Sater, who is quite brilliant. He's the writer, the book writer and lyric writer of Spring Awakening. All that's been with Stephen gives me a lyric, and I set it. So,
and is that for
a
do you have an eye on Broadway for that?
No, these were just, let's write some songs.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned before you have this classical background, jazz background. When rock first came out, it almost seems like you had kind of misgivings about it as a musical form. Has that changed over the years?
I don't think so much. You know, I mean, we go to back to rock and roll like it was existent when I was starting out. Like, I never got into Chubby Checker or Bill Haley and the Comets, you know?
Mm.
It was pretty basically 3 chords and out, you know, and simple. And at that time, you know, it wasn't that there was no music that turned me on. Just that music didn't turn me on. But by the same token, stuff that Lieber and Stoller were doing or Gamble and Huff or what was coming out of Detroit, You take records like Papa Was a Rolling Stone by the Temptations or Ain't No Mountain High Enough, which is made around that time, Diana Ross. That's probably one of the greatest records, greatest songs I ever heard, you know, and kind of sophisticated too, you know.
So what has your reaction been to several generations now of rockers having a go at your songs? I mean, from the Beatles doing Baby It's You all the way up to Blur and Oasis in the 90s and, you know, the avant-garde composer John Zorn and his friends here in New York.
I love it. You know, I am most appreciative of, you know, like Noel Gallagher wasn't even born when This Guy's in Love with You was out, you know, but he wanted to come on stage with me in London and sing This Guy's in Love with You with the symphony. And he did, you know, and thought it was a great song, and that's why he wanted to do it. But he didn't rediscover it. He just discovered it.
Yeah.
He never knew it, you know. And I think it's great. I mean, for me, just to have people singing or playing my music, like if I'm in Italy, and this has happened in a little bar somewhere on the coast, the Amalfi Coast, and there's a piano player playing, and he's playing a song of mine, and I gotta say, this is great, you know? This is really great.
Well, many people are still playing Burt Bacharach songs, including Burt Bacharach and the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. The latest release is called Burt Bacharach Live at the Sydney Opera House. Burt, really a pleasure speaking with you on Soundcheck today. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Say, I've enjoyed being here. You know, I love it that you guys exist, and that whether it's like music or great subject matter, how you handle a political campaign, I thought it was brilliant. So, hey, hats off to you all.
Well, thanks. We'll ask you to say that again come fundraising time. Thank you, Bert.
I'll be there.
Do You Know the Way to San Jose? Yet another of Burt Bacharach's 41 top 10 hits, and he's been our guest today on Soundcheck. And coming up Monday, our annual Critics Week gets underway with a look at the top pop and rock albums of 08. Later in the week, top choices in jazz, classical, world music, the year in technology, and the worst of 08. Next week on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program produced by Brian Wise and Joel Meyer. Our executive producer is Gisele Regatau, and we had help today from Emma Jacobs. I'm John Schaefer. Join us again Monday for the next Soundcheck.